Across the next few weeks, I'm proposing to go in slow gear through Dogen's Fukan-za Zengi, his universal recommendation for Zazen for all. But today I want to set a little context for it, and I want to set it in the context of Dogen's own life. We're used to thinking of him as basically a saint, the founder of our particular style of Zen, Soto Zen. But it's important to remember he was just some guy, and he went through stuff just as the rest of us do. You may know more than I do about Dogen, but here's some framing information. He was born in Kyoto in 1200. He lost his parents young. I think he was only 2 when his father died, and he was 8 when his mother died. So he was taken into the home of a relative, we think quite a well-to-do relative, and there are a couple of contenders. This is the sort of thing that gets scholars very excited. But for our purposes, it's important to know only that he was brought up to read Chinese, he was brought up to appreciate poetry. At a very young age, he showed himself to be a bright little parisher. At the age of about 12, and different versions of the texts give a different age because there's a European way of counting age and a Japanese way of counting age. But at the age of around 12, he was ordained as a priest in the Tendai school. And he went to Mount Hiei, where he was trained for some years. I don't know a great deal about Tendai. I know that it values hugely the Lotus Sutra, and Dogen's early writings reflect that. But it was, as a religion, very, very much a religion of state and politics. And it was kind of combination of what we know of Buddhism and some sort of, you know, esoteric magic stuff. And there were massive power plays in the establishment as the predominant church of the time sought to control the rulers and to validate them. And there was some very un-Buddhist practice. The various monasteries on Mount Hiei kept, I don't know how big they were, but kept warrior monk armies. And they would from time to time raid one another's temples and set fire to them. Of course, they were all made of wood. So it's a pretty messy kind of time, and not terribly spiritual. And it's interesting that Dogen lived through about 5 years of that before he went back to Kyoto, where he entered Keninji Temple, which was a Rinzai Zen temple. And there he trained under Myozen, who was Eisai's disciple. And after 4 years, when Dogen was about 21, he received the Shiho, the Dharma transmission, effectively being told, you know enough now to teach, which is reminiscent of the historical Buddha, whose teachers at one point said, okay, you know as much as we do now, you can take over the teaching seat. And just as the Buddha himself was not satisfied with that, but kept seeking because there was something in him that said this is not enough, so Dogen continued to seek. And in 1223 went with Myozen to China, to both of them to try to deepen their practice. And to make short a long story, after a couple of years of wandering around, Dogen finally found Ryugen at Tiantong Monastery in southern China, near the town of Ningbo. And as far as I can tell, there was an immediate seeing eye to eye. They really kind of hit it off. Dogen hugely respected Ryujin, and whom we know, of course, as Tendo Nyojo. This is Japanese, the Japanese version of his name. And Tendo Nyojo immediately saw in Dogen someone who was keen and someone, I guess, who could be a Dharma heir. And so for a couple of years, Dogen studied with Tendo Nyojo until finally he had a massive awakening and was given the Dharma transmission by Tendo Nyojo. He stayed for a short time, but his desire was to spread Buddhism, proper Buddhism, in his home country, in Japan. So he returned, and in 1227, Myozen, his teacher, his Rinzai teacher, having died in China, he, Dogen, went back to Kenji. And he stayed there a short time, but he wasn't really satisfied with what he found there. He didn't see the depth of training, and I guess he was, he's at the age of 27, he's probably struggling to make his mark. He said he came back from China like a man with a heavy burden. And when you realize what the religious establishment was around Kyoto at the time, and you consider that his ambition was to teach true Zazen and true Buddhism, you can see he was up against it. The first version of the Fukan Zazen, we think, was written in 1227, very soon after he came back from China. And he entered at that time a period which we think of as his wandering period. It wasn't unusual for monks to cut loose from a monastery and go out and beg for their living. And he wrote the first version of Fukan Zazengi for a lay follower. That version is lost. We don't really know how it differs from the second version. The second version, by the time he wrote that, Dogen was quite well established. He'd got a small training community going at Kushoji Monastery in Uji, just south, short train ride south of Kyoto. Of course, no trains in his day. And as far as we can tell, it was at the end of a Sesshin where he presented people with a beautifully calligraphed version of his Fukan Zazengi. And this is the first one we know, and it's called the autograph version. Sometimes it's called Tenpuku, sometimes it's called Shinpitsu. Shinpitsu means basically signed. And he's obviously honed it by then, but we don't know how much it's changed. 10 years later, he edits it once more and cuts out some of what are, to me, quite important parts. So the version that I've prepared for our study actually contains three versions, because Dogen's original is two sections wrapped around a middle section, and the middle section is taken from the Dzogchen Yi, which was a manual of meditation guidance written 125 years earlier in China. So what I'm hoping to do is to look at these three dimensions, these three versions, and to put back in and to change perhaps some of the emphasis as we look at the Fukan Zazengi, of the direct guidance that's useful to us as modern practitioners of Soto Zen. I've circulated on Zen Matters a couple of links in the first section on the zenbristol.co.uk study tab. You'll find Shikantaza, and at the bottom of that you'll find the version. The version's designed for folding into three on a piece of landscape A4 paper, but I'll also produce a version that's more readable on phones for those of you who don't want to be sliding sideways when you're looking at it. Okay, so that wraps it up for today. I'm now going to ring the bell that ends Zazen. Thank you for listening. So today is the second in a Teisho series about the Fukan Zazengi. And today we're going to focus on a short section at the beginning, which we've numbered paragraphs 1, 2 and 3. Here's what Dogen says. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What need is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? It is never apart from this very place. What is the use of travelling around to practice? And yet, if there is a hair's breadth deviation, it's like the gap between heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. A couple of years ago now, I guess it was, Yusho-san spoke to the Prosby summer session about a particular part of the Book of Equanimity. But she made the point that Dogen, in his work, the Shobogenzo, always kicks off each new section with a very clear and powerful statement of his theme. And that almost you could read the Shobogenzo, since it's a rather daunting text, you could almost read it one page from each of the 95 fascicles and get a lot from it because of this powerful beginning. And the powerful beginning begins in the title even. You know, Dogen took what was called the Zazengi in Chinese and put in front of it the word Fukan, meaning universal for all people everywhere. And that's his first message, and a message which he drums in time and again in his writing, that Zazen is the most important thing if you wish to make religious progress. We've been looking at the Fukan Zazengi in a study group, and it's been a privilege to share a wide variety of thinking about many sections. I'm not going to name-check everybody as we read, as we discuss this first section, but everything I have to say draws on the things that were mentioned. The first comment that I want to raise is that the Fukan Zazengi opening is as much about the feeling as the content. It gives a sort of sense, a direction for what's going to follow. And it says categorically in the first sentence, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. The kanji for perfect is a circle. It's not a picture of a circle, it means circle. And there's a lovely sense of the all-embracing nature of the way and the fact that you really can't step off it even if you try. My first Zen teacher said, if you don't want to be grabbed by the cosmic Buddha, never sit down on a black cushion in the first place. Because once we begin to see a little glimpse of what's coming, we're hooked. So these eight words are very easy to pass over quickly, but they're deep and profound. The way is originally perfect and all-pervading. And I was struck by the image of a hologram. No matter which angle you look at it, you still see it clearly, and every fragment contains the whole. So if this is the case, and this is Dogen's koan, why do we need to train if we're perfect already, if everything is as it should be? What's our purpose in training? Why do we need to do it? And one of the study group said, when we're truly present, it isn't contingent until ego comes up and we see we've been pulled away. And so our practice is to observe, to accept, and then to continue, to return to the presence. If we get our ego out of the way, there is no problem, we can sense that. And Dogen goes on to say, reinforcing this point, the whole body is free from dust. So why do we need to brush it clean? It's never apart from this very place. Why do we need to go somewhere special to practice? And yet, and here's the difficulty, if there's a hair's breadth deviation, there's a gap between heaven and earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. So Dogen's koan really is our koan. Why do we need to practice? And there's no simple answer to that. And I think practice is a feeling inside us, and Zazen is a way we express that. When we settle down, it feels like coming home. And when we drop all the divisions, the discriminatory thinking, and just are, we find something deep inside ourselves, which is both comforting and optimistic. In the Mondo on Wednesday, I asked Chris a question about getting a balance between study and sitting Zazen. Because the problem with study is, in a sense, it's never ending. Everything leads on to something else, and we don't really want to be scholars. Later I'll transcribe Chris's full answer, but I think it boils down to, study's nice, but Zazen comes first. So all the time that our study reinforces our practice, it's probably good. All the time it throws light on sitting, it's probably fine. But it can be a trap, and it can be a distraction. And if you find yourself thinking, I'll just read this, rather than sitting down, you've probably fallen for the hook. Now I'll ring the bell to end Zazen. We'll continue our discussion of the Fuken Zazengi. And for the first time we come across a paragraph that is in the early version, which Dogen later removed. And I suppose the question for us is, have we lost anything important here? Have we lost any good guidance? We're not clear why he revised it out, as he did four other paragraphs which came later. And in the study group we had a very interesting, lively discussion provoked by this particular paragraph, which reads as follows. We should know that the aeons of transmigration in samsara are caused by the discrimination of one moment. The path of delusion in the dusty world is also caused by ceaseless evaluation. If you want to thoroughly transcend even enlightenment, you should simply understand how to settle down right here. And in some ways I regret the removal of this guidance. The first sentence, you should know that aeons of transmigration are caused by the discrimination of one moment, points out to us the importance of focusing really closely on our daily lives, on our actions. It's so easy, by something we say on the spur of the moment and later regret, to change the path of eternity, to ruin a relationship, or to create some turbulence that needn't be there. It's a very harsh way of expressing it here. And maybe he found later that some of these paragraphs repeated things, and some of them maybe generated a bit of problem by being a bit too forthright. He goes on to say, the path of delusion in the dusty world is caused by ceaseless evaluation. And certainly, the mind, the brain, is pretty good at turning up stuff. In the study group, we looked at the natural mind of a child, their innocence and directness. And we looked at the judgments that you make about yourself. And we looked at those crazy kind of gotcha moments when you think your Zazen's going really well and you congratulate yourself. And then you suddenly think, damn, I wasn't thinking and now I am. And then you think, and that's another thought. And you get into the kind of perpetual loop, if you like, which you simply have to drop and let go. Thought is always partial. Chris said on Tuesday mornings in the Kusen, there's no such thing as an enlightened thought. Thought's partial in two ways. First, in that it can only ever give us an incomplete picture of reality because it's filtered by our perceptions. And then secondly, it's partial because it is biased by those perceptions, by our subjective gaze. So one way or another, in this paragraph and in the ones that follow, Dogen advises against expecting to be able to think our way to enlightenment and enlightened action and an enlightened life. Analytical thought is sometimes destructive, but it's always misleading. And yet, of course, in our society, we educate our youngsters towards rational thought as though it were the only way of understanding life. I think the bit that I most regret losing from this paragraph is the last phrase. He says, if you want to thoroughly transcend even enlightenment, you should simply understand how to settle down right here. There's a world of self-forgiveness in that simple phrase, how to settle down. And in many ways, settling down is exactly what I think Master Geeth means when he says, presence, be present, be here. Paragraph 4 and 5 and 6 go on to elaborate the idea that no amount of erudition, no amount of storming heaven, no amount of thought will actually take us where we want to go. And he says, consider the Buddha. Although he was wise at birth, the traces of his 6 years of upright sitting can still be seen. As for Bodhidharma, although he had received the mind seal, his 9 years of facing a wall is celebrated still. If even the ancient ancestors were like this, how can we dispense with wholehearted practice? And I think it's worth reflecting that the 6 years that are described in connection with the Buddha are the 6 years that led up to his moment of enlightenment. But in the case of Bodhidharma, the 9 years that are mentioned are after he has the mind seal. We've said before, sitting Zazen is a life's work. Enlightenment isn't some sort of flash in the pan, after which you can settle back and enjoy life in your armchair. The more you see through your Zazen, the more you want to change, the more you need to keep doing it. And I take great comfort from Bodhidharma's 9 years continued practice, as indeed, of course, although it's not mentioned here, the Buddha himself continued to practice throughout the rest of his natural life. The Fukan Zazengi offers us great hope. Dogen completes it by saying, if you do these things for some time, you will become as herein described, and then the treasure house will open naturally, and you will enjoy it fully. You will enjoy it. You'll be able to use it at will in this translation. Settling down into yourself, settle down right now, does it for me. It reminds me of Uchiyama Roshi's book title and teaching, Opening the Hand of Thought. Letting go, being ourselves, as Deshimaru Roshi would say, naturally, unconsciously, and automatically. Settling into ourselves, of course there are thoughts. We're not rocks, we're not stones, we're not inanimate objects. Thoughts will come up, and our job is not to be seduced by them and led off by them and churn them around in our minds, because really that's not doing Zazen. Zazen is seeing the thought, opening the hand, letting it go, returning to the naive mind of the child in which we experience the reality before us without the filters of thought, without filters of egotistical self, and we come to our true home, the Dharma gate of peace and ease.